Do not adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network. Cool.
Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. A growing number of people think that aliens have been influencing the history of this planet since there's been a history of this planet. As always, our guest of honor and the man who, in my opinion, knows more about this than anyone alive, it's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
Hey, we have some good news tonight.
Great.
That the mic cable on our microphone is wearing out. That's what that buzz is. We'll fix that momentarily. No, the other good news is that Curtis Cooperman from Hello Earth is going to be resuming broadcasts with Michael. When will that re-begin, so to speak?
Well, I'm trying to persuade him to make sure he comes on here and gives it a go on and see what direction he wants to take that.
Well, of course, Curtis is welcome to come on. We're hoping next week he'll be able to join us and talk about the upcoming restart of the Hello Earth series, which has been tremendously helpful to those that have been following Michael's revelations, shall we say. So we welcome Curtis, hopefully, next week. Anything happened in the world in the last 7 days, Michael, we need to know about?
Well, as always, you know, the continuation of the predicted, we're living out many of the prophetic as well as the predicted events that are, were forecast to happen. We're now living through them. And as you can tell, it's not going to crack the earth in half and everybody's going to die. But there is immense changes ahead, and changes that have more to do with our ascent than a descent. And that has to do with, you know, a real change in the modus operandi of how this planet is run. And it's a very resistive time for those that have been in power and those that have tried to remain in power and are still trying to, and using very, you know, hideous means many times, and some of them are just very obsolete methods. And one of the methods, of course, that will become more and more obsolete, of course, is war in a big sense. But given to me by revelation this morning, that there is still tremendous tension, and the celestials are indeed watching the events happening, and these have to do again with the Middle East, and they're looking in ways in which ocean trafficking is getting along or being blockaded or things similar to that that are happening, and they're very aware of that. And in fact, actually on board, in a way, not physically on board, but in a way on board, some of these things, so they know what's going on, coming down or perhaps even being planned, but they are not to interfere directly. This is being played out by free-willed people, we, the planet. Our most precious part of us. This is one of the most important points that was given to me today to just make mention of again. Our free will. Our free will is the most precious of all of our attributes. Our intelligence, great, but we can make intelligence machines. But the free will, as free agents, and this universe is to be populated by them, given greater and greater lifespans. And the greatest of all, of course, is one that never ends. However, I was realizing that there are many that don't necessarily make that journey very, very long, hopefully longer than our measly lifespans of, you know, whatever they amount to. Even if it was a century, it doesn't amount to much in terms of their timetable, or their span, which has to be much, much longer, and one which we have to attain a certain level of competence, a certain level of purity in order to continue in that direction and move in that direction. Otherwise, it'll stop moving, and essentially that's death.
Well, Michael, this show is airing live on December 13th, 2011. It's ticking down, folks. We're either all going to be here next year about this time, or all going to be crying. Boy, in 12 months from today, will anything be different than it is today?
Well, yeah, there are things that happen that immensely change the picture of things, and we are at least moving progressively, not suddenly in a change, but progressively things have changed, but many of them are looked upon as being bad, which are perhaps preambles to a change that will be essentially good. As free-willed individuals, if that is ever lost in one way or another, locked up, caged up, stopped, or whatever, the progress of this planet will stop. And, of course, that be of no use because the program will have been stopped, which was essentially, you know, on this planet, it essentially started basically from basic microbial life onto where we are, was to bring that ascension developed mechanism that we might become sentient beings with a essence, a life force, a reality, a awareness that can be passed on and never pass, and one which would have a free will and cooperative agency in terms of co-creating a greater universe. This is the most wonderful thing, the concept of co-creation. When I was sat in front of these monitors, what they were telling me to do, these monitors are interesting, they're like very close to what we have today in our newest monitors, except they just appeared on the wall. But given the level of technology we have, we're very close in terms of mimicking, coming close to what some of the learning tools that I use. And what it was, were trying to teach me, was this ascent program, and one in which it takes not only our clever ingenuity and technologies, but to get on board with the program, because it sure is stupid to think that the world will just progress with people that live and then die, and that's it. And the whole mechanism of life and death, is just for that, just useless. This is where I was so lost, and I decided to seek the first source and center, look for it, and essentially had a big favor, and that was being taken to the New Jerusalem, that gigantic architectural sphere orbiting Saturn, in which there are the actual Most Highs, the very same Most Highs described or named in biblical ideals, even ones in which were mentioned even earlier, and those as well as those that have been talked about and unearthed and transcribed by people like Zachariah Sitchin, because those individuals were there also. So it's an amazing, amazing revelation of the universe and the concept of co-creation. And it's more than a concept. It's an actual functioning organization of free will beings that are on this ascent program, which will essentially never terminate, never end.
If you have a question or comment, send it to us at dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll read it to Michael later in the broadcast. Well, if we you know, we talk about free will constantly. And much like us Trekkie fans, it's the greatest truth in the universe. Well, maybe that's the wrong way to say it. It is a law that is meant not to be broken. Once we achieve the realization, once we have evolved far enough as a species to realize that there are beings beyond our planet that have been influencing our history, isn't it our free will to ask them for help and knowledge and guidance?
Well, they've been open to us for a long time, and many of us have been receiving insight and direction directly from them. You know, the forefathers of our nation, and I'm not talking about the nation, our nation, the United States of America, they were literally being essentially guided telepathically. There was this group in which essentially the founding fathers, some of them were part of Quakers, or the concept of the Quaker. You know what an earthquake is?
Of course.
It shakes, right? And a Quaker, as they got together, they would shake under a type of trance-like state of telepathic communication. And from there, they would be able to understand the direction in which this new nation was to set forth a new style of governance within the world. Now, we're living in a point where America is going to go through another change, a change in which would have a lot to do with somewhat of the breaking down of the kinds of power that have been eroding the original concept. And that erosion or dis-ease is still in place, but it has to change, and it will change. But the essential element which caused the foundation of a very young nation that continues on to this day are, you know, our forefathers, concept-wise, were receiving this kind of help. And it is still happening today, as some of them ascended into areas in which they could literally write down and guide the nation's methods and foundational abilities, of course, which are many of which, you know, essentially are trying to be ignored, constitutionally ignored. Essentially, what constitution? What? What's that? You know, they're taking their free will beyond the level, and this is something that may have both good and bad effects. It depends on how you know, it is played out by our own choices, and there always a consequence to choice.
Well, when the Celestials look down upon us and they are hoping at some time we get our act together, whether it takes hundreds or thousands or millions of years, at some point in time they may say, you know what, they are ready to take the next step. My concern is that trying to take an objective look at our civilization, our economic environment, the world around us today, in my humble opinion, we are so far from that point that it's very discouraging. Your thoughts?
Yes, it seems that way because of the rough and tumble way our planet is run. But you've got to remember there's people who hang on. Really countries, you know, actual sovereign countries, countries that say this is our business, and the people within essentially, at least hopefully, want to remain sovereign. And this is played out in the universe of sovereign worlds. Yet we can play this out, not in terms of world against another world, within what happened within the Satania system, in which we are 606th planet of Satania system. The other Satania group planets, some of them warred against each other using technologies which were devastating. Tananella, are one of those that have come out of that, which if actually, if you go and look at some of the, I think there's a statement in front of the coming of 10, in which 10 essentially telepathically sent Riley Martin his statement, and it's a letter of having seen worlds come and go, and literally worlds destroyed. And some of these are being played out, and even in some of how our writers, supposed science fiction writers, have been actually attuned to some of the story of our ancient universe and some of our ancient past in terms of our sister planets within the system that have had hardships. And ours remains as one of the last with essential pure future, but going through these hardships. That's why they know, of course, out of the lessons learned in actually bigger, more horrible ways, that the way our planet is going at least can be played out in a smaller sense, with less devastation. And we'd learn the same lessons, and ones in which will cause us to become supreme leaders in the future of the growth and, as I said, co-creation of the greater universe.
That's
so
great.
Anyway, that's one of the challenges we are within right now.
Let's grab a quick email and change gears for a moment.
Okay.
Dear Michael, the last Earth crustal shift started on July 26th, 9792 BC, and the next will be on February 21st, 2013, from Lord Pascal's tomb lid. Please comment on how the Mayan culture knew the exact day of our future. That's from Tangen Wan.
Okay, one of the interesting things about how they described many of these stories was that they actually did have people, you know, probably the easiest word I can use is that celestial people who are citizens of the system who had in their hands understanding of the way in which the universe or even just a galaxy work, and were able to attune their calculations to the cyclical events that not only precede but were coming about. So these events follow cycles, and cycles in which are predictable to a great sense, and also to a great sense actually forecastable in ways which are closely linked to parallel realities. But these parallel realities, people call them parallel universe, they're actually parallel realities where they function in flux with a central stem. Essentially, they flow with, but around, acting as types of mirrors, you might say. If you were to, you know, let's look at it as something that we might have as a rear view mirror as we drive forward. We look forward, we see forward in our real time, and we make assumptions that way. But yet, looking in the rear without having that, we use a mirror. Something that reflects, timed, in a very, very, very non-sophisticated sense, looking back. Now, if there is a mirror that can look forward or all around, essentially we get a type of parallel objective, or an objective of a greater objective of ourselves. In that, you know, that simplistic way I'm trying to put it, it's sort of how they use different types of dimensional transimaging that is able to give them forecasting techniques.
We all complain when the weatherman says it's going to rain and it doesn't. But, you know, we know that their calculations are based on models and have variables that they may not happen the way they model it. If there were mirrors that look forward, does that necessarily mean that, you know, John Doe was going to do this thing, no matter, you know, that he was destined to do this thing because we saw it in the mirror and he was, you know, and does that mean, are we talking predestiny now?
Well, yeah, in a sense, you have a different perspective. You know, one of the ways is that we have in our imagery, we are a kind of creature that has essentially stereoscopic vision that is primarily focused forward. We're not like some animals that have a much greater range of vision, which is sometimes even greater than 180 degrees. We can, through the use of our, you know, cameras and stuff, create a image, forward-looking image that is extremely broad, even continuous 360 degrees, and place it within our imaging, in which, you know, essentially, let's say a computer screen. And from there, we can fly a plane or whatever. Similarly, this is the same concept I'm trying to say, and use in how the celestials use a type of technology in looking forward as well as backward in terms of our concept of linear time. Their perspective instruments are ones that we are pretty much going to get a hold of pretty soon. You know, it's something that isn't going to be held back from us. It's there. We will eventually bump into them if we make the right choices. And from them, we will be shown many of the things so that our planet will have the chance to avoid problems that could come about with just ignorance. You know, just not see that car coming on from the right and boom, get smashed.
We should get some of the producers from the History Channel, Discovery Channel on here. They added a couple new shows this weekend. The five most likely ways we're all going to die. Was Lawrence Fishburne the is that the guy that was hosting that one? You know, it's a couple more new alien discoveries, this and that. I mean, it's, come on, folks. In the last 3 years, we've had more of these types of programs than all of the years combined. You think that Hollywood knows something that we don't, Michael?
I think they are tuning in on what is going to make them money. And what makes them money is the number of people that are interested in watching these shows. And because of the climate, you know, our essential unsure future, it has given a lot of people a little bit of wondering how things are going to be and if they can avoid them. And it's one of the things that is sensible. You know, I don't think Curtis minds me telling you, in my conversation with Curtis, he's thinking of buying a boat because he's got flooded out of his house 5 times this year and it's been a stress on his life. One of the things that he said was interesting was that he's going to get a boat, you know, a big boat, which he could use as a house, anchor it down, and if a flood comes, it won't come very high, and if the boat does float, at least it'll come right back down, and you have everything. Essentially, it'll be way above a flood, just sort of maybe 2 feet of the boat. In the worst case, flood would probably be in the water, so it may not even float. But the idea is not unique. In Hawaii, we have some people who are in the coastline actually find themselves with, you know, you look in their backyard, what is that big boat over there? Your backyard, well, it's made to live in the ocean. Oh, we got them over there. Put them in the backyard. That's where the boys go and watch the game, you know. And it's pretty nice inside of some of those boats that are sitting in the backyard. Big, big boats. Some of them are about 40, 50 feet. Just sitting there because there's a lot. These guys have gotten old, and they decided it's more cheaper to put them in the backyard and leave them in the water. And they said it'll last. So preparing for problems. Well, he's been flooded out, so it makes common sense that, hey, you know, if you want to stay on his property, and have something that'll make it and have it the cheapest way. And there are people that give away big boats because they're a headache to keep. So interesting. He had some interesting ideas. So looking forward, looking into the future sometimes. This is, you know, it happened once, happened twice, happened. You know, try again. And as far as things like earthquakes, devastations that are causing our Earth to become very plastic and fluid, much more than before, could cause some extremely problematic events. And a good example of the problems that were avoided was the concept of Noah and the Ark, in which the flood came and the Ark came floating away. That idea still remains, and that's part of the warning. And it's different, a little different for everybody's situation, but nevertheless, you know, people need food to eat, they need water, things like that, and these things can be stocked up, they can be maybe more valuable than the dollar, perhaps, in a short-term case in which things go down and don't work. Our computer system in Hawaii went down for a while, power failure. Airports went like crazy. You couldn't ring out. If you had cash, you could ring out of some of the supermarkets, but you couldn't use your credit card, which required an online exchange of information, data transfer. So these kinds of things can be thought of as something to prepare for. And they're just people who have made their whole life's purpose, you know, putting out information how to prepare for some things like this, and they're right on the net.
One of the programs I was watching as I slept on the couch over the weekend was a company who builds arcs, just like Noah's, that's right, $20 million a piece, capable of handling 200 people on the ocean for several months. And in fact, the person doing the documentary had to reveal that some of the people ordering these arcs were furious that the public was made aware that these arcs exist. Go figure, folks. You got $20 million to drop on an arc for next year? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, think about this for a minute. We've been talking about disclosure for many, many, many years. We've been hoping, you know, I talked to Linda Moulton House. She said, yes, she would have a show on Artists First on Friday, and on Monday she said no. So she almost joined us. If you recall, she was the HBO producer who was contacted by the U.S. government and special interests who brought her footage of actual alien encounters and said, we want to slowly make this available to the public. And they helped her make a documentary that a few days before broadcast, they said, we've changed our minds. We know they're out there. Okay, so if by chance there is a revelation, there are landings in the next year or two, then the people who were worried about what would happen in the negative effects of disclosure, in other words, if you were one of those government officials that have been keeping this hidden and you're still alive and are worried that they're going to come rip you apart in your living room for not telling us, if this revelation happens from the Celestials in 2012, then there's no need for disclosure, is there?
Yeah, there really won't be any need for disclosure. However, as long as there's a question mark, people like Linda Moulton Howe can make a living at, finding out information and reporting on it. It's much different from this show, which has a matter-of-fact kind of a personality. I'm talking about myself, as well as a predecessor like Riley Martin, who essentially, as a matter of fact, have spent time with the celestial beings. And these beings have educated us in one form or another, sometimes formal, sometimes not so formal, and left us with a type of enlightenment. Now, this concept of enlightenment is very close to the concept of the Buddhist ideal. However, that ideal or that enlightenment is brought up to par in terms of our timetable and our technologies and where we live and function, because it's very similar to Buddhism is very similar to the concept of how to behave, you know, essentially, as far as a celestial citizen, not just a citizen of the planet, but a citizen of it, of the universe, a free citizen of the universe. So that is something that the celestials did in an earlier time, try to soften our planet, try to prepare the planet, because essentially try to clean it up. Because of the known fact that the universe creator himself was going to become a mortal creature, basically one that could be killed, and partake of the very base level of ascent, the first level of ascent from sentience, and understand our predicament here as far as the economy of mortal life and its consequences, many of the problems of choice. Now, that was done, and the universe creator did come, and we are, you know, essentially a couple thousand years after that, still functioning with the same pressures, but having a much higher level of civilization. Now, this tells me very simply that we are progressing in not only our technology, but the way in which we live and the way in which life continues on at a different modality than it did thousands of years ago. The modality has totally changed. The paradigm of our life, the devices that make our life are very closely related to the civilization of which I participated in a short time, in terms of being in the New Jerusalem, seeing their technology, understanding their many modes of life, many types of life, all of which are sentient, and it's a tremendous similarity. We're getting very close, so the progress is being made. Definitely, we have not gone backwards. Gone a lot forward. One of the things that I was pointing out, just talking with Curtis Cooperman, was that the idea of Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla, he says, was essentially a citizen of Venus prior to incarnation as a human being. Was a gifter of much of our technology today, inventing both one of the highest levels of communication, which was radio, as well as putting in place our power grid, distributed energy from central points, and one in which gave us light and gave us time to work when there was no light, moving us from agrarian to one in which more technological. Today we're moving from that technological, mechanistic method in which we will be moving into a level of information that is so beyond what we have today, as that blend of our technologies is moving ever closer to what the celestials have. And essentially they know they haven't been able to keep us off the planet. In fact, that was not the goal at all. It was to have a timetable ready. In that timetable, 2012 makes a lot of sense, because there are certain things which seem to be ready to break down right around there. Our economic system has to change. Way in which the paradigm runs is to change. A paradigm shift will occur, definitely will occur.
Michael, prior to humans being given the divine fractal, going back however many thousands or tens of thousands of years before the flood, those species on this planet that were eliminated for whatever reasons, what were their motivations? In other words, our motivation now is to evolve and become, find our way back to the Creator. It's our job to evolve and become closer with the first source. What was the motivation for people prior to our version of humanity, this version of humanity?
Okay, prior to that, we're much closer to the animal, which is basically survival, a survivalist. Now, one of the things I enjoy is fishing. I like to go fishing and things like that. Some people say fishing and hunting. These are base hunter-gatherer motives and motifs, yeah, essentially. That paradigm of survival is only played out in sport now. But prior to us, it was highly skilled hunter-gatherer types, talking about people like the Neanderthal, which has disputed whether it interbred into the our present human function, but human type, I guess. But Homo sapiens, the idea of those who first found sentience was actually snuffed out. And then a long period was required for that to reemerge. And then when it did reemerge, it was with us, the Homo sapiens. However, the divine fractal was not openly offered to all those, because certain of the present ingredients for making that fractal operational wasn't in place. And today, especially after, you can go back 2,000 years, and that was that point in which it became operational. And that operational motif was what was described by Jesus Christ as the Holy Spirit, or that extra-dimensional energetic igniter, the catalyst which would ignite and function with the divine fractal, pre-personal divine fractal, to give us the kind of guidance necessary that would cause us to be very different from the animals. And even animals that have bigger brains than us, much better memories, like the elephant I'm talking about. I rode an elephant, and as I rode this elephant, I simply tried to, you know, have a understanding of this animal. And I realized that this animal has many of the feelings that we do, emotions, and they can also have a tremendous memory. And much better than myself. You know, I have a terrible memory, especially I get embarrassed all the time if I'm introduced to people and I forget their name 2 seconds after I I was introduced to them.
Happens to me all the time, Michael.
You know, it's very embarrassing. You got to ask for the name again. But anyway, it's the kind of thing that says, okay, we may not have the best mechanism of mind on the planet, but we have the kind of sentience that makes us have the way we use that mind mechanism or brain mechanism, and even have the sharing ability, which makes us have a higher sense. The sharing ability, let's look at the sharing ability. Once we create the tactile interfaces, essentially have one that is intuitive, which is a computer world, one that is a very intuitive interface to the computer systems. And I got on board with computer systems way back with assembly language stuff and all that, but it was very, very foreign. Today it's so friendly, but it's, you know, it's the way we are functioning. But now with the concept I'm trying to show you on the opposite end, in which our consciousness is shared with higher celestial beings, as well as celestial agents, as well as the most important one, the very divinity within us, that fractal of divine intelligence that is given to us, that helps us find attunement to inspirational development that causes the inventiveness of our types, and also the creative energy. You know, it's that mix that comes about because we are individuals with free abilities, and we come up with all kinds of different ideas to to make things, make things and make ideas and put them to work because we have that divinity within us. Prior to that, we was a search. It wasn't quite as creative, co-creative. And you might say that this world has been created in its form, co-creative, by us, having influence from first source, but one in which does not limit us, and we are allowed to make mistakes, because we essentially, yes, we're still in our sandbox in preschool, but getting with knowledge, and this is one of the things, again, I must give everyone out there the understanding that if you have come to a point where you are assigned a celestial guide, a celestial guardian of your destiny, personal guardian of destiny, you've penetrated past the third inner circle, you're moving toward the second, right into the first, they're looking at you as having a tremendous future, much like a nanny would, knowing that they're taking care of future perhaps king or queen or someone that would influence the future of the well-being of many, many people. So this is what we are on this planet, essentially moving toward co-creation of a greater universe, because the universe is continually expanding. There are ever more galaxies that are basically only in formative stages, and others which are older that never had sentience in them and are being swallowed up right now. So this is an amazing thing, thinking of how our great and the size of our universe is, and that there's so much more room for expansion. And this is, again, the concept of everything, of gravity, the concept of expansion.
I just wanted to jump back for just a second to the point you made earlier in the broadcast that, you know, some creatures are born with nearly 180-degree vision. My buddy dated a girl named Ruth, and you could not sneak up on her. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
They call that eyes in the back of their head.
Yeah, it was a little freakish, but anyway. What are we to make of history when we, if we accept the fact, if listeners accept the fact that celestial beings have been influencing Earth for hundreds or thousands of years or millions of years, then what do we make of the mass extinctions? Are we to believe that the celestials messed up and they were like, oh, damn it, this is screwed up. Let's just, you know, wipe the slate clean and start over. Does that, first of all, I don't know if that's the case, and if it is it, of course, it's our free will, but doesn't it have a bad reflection on those that are trying to help us if it all goes bad?
Well, you mean the mass extinctions?
Right. I mean,
well, first
you know,
of all, the mass extinctions were portrayed in terms of looking at them in images that we sat in front and just simply looked at, and understanding that the planet has gone through cataclysm and sudden change, and these were orchestrated many times by the celestials because of not finding any being rise up out of the base life forms that would gain sentience. So later there were others that did come up in other planets that did not come up, let's say from a bird type. The bird types that of course were the legacy of the dinosaurs are in some ways, many of the celestials themselves are essentially from that order. But we are kind of like coming out of the mammalian one that simply looks more like a tree-dwelling animal that could be traced down to that ideal. But there was a time in which purposefully on their the old reign of Lucifer. Life was experimented upon on this planet heavily to gain that sentient being. However, that sentient being was sort of like hijacked. It wasn't supposed to be hijacked, but it was under a program which is broken right now. But the legacy of much of what was introduced into the enslavement concept remains. So some of the tools still remain that was put in place way back when.
For those of you that have joined us late, we want to announce we're hoping that Curtis Cooperman will be joining us as a guest on next week's broadcast. That would be, where's my calendar? That must be the 20th of December. And if not, that's great. We'll have him on when he can get here. But we also want to announce that he's going to be restarting the Hello Earth broadcasts and maybe coming to you from a boat, but we don't care where it comes from as long as it comes to you from somewhere.
He's alive and well and having been gone through a lot of trial over this past few months.
Our celestial friends have a lot more faith in humanity than I do. I'm pragmatic. I look around the world and I see where we are. I see the circumstances, at least in my humble opinion of my existence, of why things are the way they are. And they're basically due to wealth, power, and prestige. And did I add the word greed, which is involved in there? Everything seems to be revolving around those four principles, not around what's the right thing to do, not around what's the most compassionate thing to do, or how can we help each other, but around how can I win with the most toys and the most money and the most power.
One of the interesting things that recently happened was with American Airlines, they filed bankruptcy. Now, this was a way in which they could opt out of payments. Now, the CEO was extremely against the idea because it would cut some of the basic, retirement things and all those things that, you know, the workers who gave their lifeblood to keep their airlines going was to be protected in the idea of the CEO's heart. Now, what the CEO did was, when he was overruled by the board of directors, he said that if he ever was and they would do something like this type of a bankruptcy, he would resign. And he did. When it finally did, he gave his farewell and his regrets that it had to come that way. And he didn't take any golden parachute. He just simply left with whatever, you know, he was supposed to get. But there was seemingly no golden parachute that he bailed out with. So this is a sign that essentially we still have humanity with us. Although you have to bail out of the inhumane corporate environment, profit-oriented mechanism and machine, that particular machine is one of the ones that will have to be changed. That paradigm, which made a non-entity an entity, a human agent, a corporation, that has to change tremendously because it's unfeeling. It has no feeling, has no heart, and it cannot be guided by the design fractal. So this is what has happened, and it's given me faith to say that even as leaders sometimes have to throw up their hands, but will have fought the good fight all the way to the end. And
I believe that gentleman's name is Gerard Arpe, according to the Google article I'm looking up now. Gerard Arpe was the American Airlines man through and through, and I believe that's the guy who you are referring to. So we wanted to make sure listeners know his name. And, you know, I'm going to try to get him on an upcoming broadcast. Oh, you think we can't get the chairman of American Airlines? Have you seen the guests we've had on, listeners? I'm going to give it a shot. Who knows? But, you know, there are a lot of executives out there I wouldn't let on my property or in the station under any circumstances. But this guy, I would love to have on. He's one of us, and he's going to retire into opulence like all these CEOs do. But, you know, at least he stood up made a stand, not like those sons of bitches from Goldman Sachs, who when they were said, "Don't you think those bonuses are pretty excessive when all America is suffering?" And they went, "No, I'm good.
No, I'm good.
I'm good." And there you go, folks. When you get in a difficult situation and they caught you stealing and you're lying out your teeth, just say, "I'm good." They're teaching us what we need to know. With the 3 minutes we have left, I want to remind all of our listeners that the reason we do this broadcast is to put out information about what is happening in your world and hope that you pay attention to it. The reason Michael does this program is because he told his celestial friends he would. Michael has nothing to sell. He is not getting compensated from our station in any way, shape, or form. We have no advertisers. In fact, Michael has to take time off work. And he does this because he told his celestial friends that he would. How many of you people out there have kept your word about anything you have done in your lives, myself included? Michael, on behalf of all of our listeners on every broadcast, we thank you sincerely for your time on this show.
And certainly welcome, and the Celestials themselves, in fact, are overjoyed that this mouthpiece is allowed, gets out to as many as they actually help in propagating throughout the planet through our wonderful technologies today.
Well, maybe the Celestials will make an appearance with us next week. It will be our last broadcast of the year. What would that be? The 28th, we are not here, but the 20th, or, sorry, I told you the wrong dates, listeners. It's the 27th, the week between New Year's and Christmas and New Year's, rather. We will not be here. That will be the 27th. But we will have our last 2011 broadcast next week on December 20th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we hope all of you can join us. Michael, enjoy your next week in paradise. Stay safe, and we can't wait to get back with you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Okay, aloha. Thank you very much.
And ladies and gentlemen, maybe Curtis will be joining us a week from today. Tune in to find out. Thanks for joining us, everybody.